The Heartland Community College Board has approved a tentative $32 million operating budget for next year. That includes about a 6% increase in salaries, and it's the second year of planned deficit spending. President Keith Cornell says those deficits will end, they hope, as a planned realignment continues in what Heartland does and how it does it. In this interview with GLT's Charlie Schlenker and Heartland Vice President for Finance Doug Minter, Cornell says the long-term strategic plan projects growth while being stable and furthering the economic development of the area.
There was a Georgetown study that was recently done that said by 2020, 65% of all jobs in the U.S. would require some sort of post-secondary education, but not as much as a bachelor's degree. Generally, some college or to the level of an associate's degree. So the type of education and training we provide here at the institution. And when we, in the past year, took a look at our district, what we found was that 58% of the population over the age of 25 years old in our district are lacking that level of educational attainment. And when we took a little deeper dive into it, we found that 7.8% of those residents over the age of 25 in our district don't even have a high school diploma.
How is that shaping and changing what you're trying to do?
So what that means is that we've kind of said we need to do some things with our program to shift and address several needs. One is the academic portfolio, the things that we offer at the college. Currently, the college offers about 84% of our credits are generated in the transfer side of the house. We want to keep a strong transfer program, but balance that out with career and technical education programs so that we come closer in line with the other community colleges across the state.
And how many years will it take you to rebalance?
I think it will probably take us, we'll start to see a gain, not in this first year, but in the second year we'll start to see a gain with some of the programs that we put in place. So we'll be putting in what we're calling work-ready programs, programs that respond to the workforce needs. The first program that we have coming online will actually be this fall with a medical assistant program. And part of what we're doing is we're shifting staff in order to have an office related to work ready and innovation. In other words, a unit that will develop the curriculum that really is thinking about the current job needs as well as those future job opportunities that are just starting to crest and are going to be those type of jobs of the future that sometimes people say we don't know about today.
Change is rough. What is that going to mean for your personnel alignments? Who will have to either do something different or leave?
And that's part of what we've been doing with the reorganization. As we have had vacancies, we've realigned them, and we've shifted duties and responsibilities of folks, primarily in the student service areas, enrollment areas, and then with this new work-ready concept. So some folks have new jobs, and we have created a few new positions in order to have the staffing that we believe is needed in order to meet those objectives for stronger enrollments.
What are those new positions?
Some of those new positions are an executive director for work ready and innovation, a curriculum person in that area as well, so somebody that can just start to develop, working with the faculty, developing those types of programs that are addressing workforce needs. We also have another staff that we have shifted in order to provide support, logistics, and data review for that area. We've also have done a few things different with our regional campuses or centers, so that we can better meet the needs in those communities as well.
Will this eventually be employment neutral, or will you shrink your workforce?
We will not be shrinking our workforce. We're reassigning work, and we do anticipate that we will have several new positions.
Sometimes in the midst of change, certain sectors go down and decline, at least temporarily. Are you experiencing that in the first year, and do you expect to see lower credit hours or lower enrollments in certain areas as you shift?
Not necessarily, because I think the shifting of the credit hours that we're looking at are in areas that we have not have had significant enrollments in the past. So what we're trying to do is add in the career and technical education areas, which is where we have that opportunity for gain. Generally, many of those programs, as we design them, will also be attracting the older audience, if you will, those over 25 people that maybe are underemployed right now or looking for new opportunities, people that have not been engaged with the college. So we believe that, and with our strategies, we're seeking a new market sector that has not previously been served as well by the college. Also, with some of our areas where we know that we've had underserved population looking at data, it will allow us to get into those communities and grow the populations in those areas as well, or enrollments in those areas.
Like where and like what?
Well, we do know that we don't have a significant number of enrollments in Logan County. I'll use that as an example. And so I think we have an opportunity to gain enrollments in Logan County. We also know that that's a higher area of, the educational attainment is lower there than here in McLean County. So I think it offers an opportunity for us to do some things to improve people's skills and then moving them into career-related type of trainings and courses.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Keith Corneal, the president of Heartland Community College, and with Doug Minter, the vice president for finance at Heartland, about the tentative new budget approved yesterday by the Heartland College Board. How about the actual dollars? What does the new budget look like?
The salary line increases by about 6%, but that is a combination of a number of things, including typical across-the-board annual salary increases, some of the reorganization work that Keith has described, an effort that's been underway for at least 18 months called our Position Framework Alignment Project, which is striving to gain more market competitiveness for positions across all ranks, and includes an allowance for the first wave of the minimum wage implementation. And then we also have some obligations for people retiring. So there's a number of things in there, all included in that roughly 6 or 6.4% increase.
What's the cost of living increase for the people not already accounted for by collective bargaining?
So, of course, we don't call it that. Typically, our across-the-board increase follows the faculty contract, but that rate this year is 2.5%.
Personnel is always the most expensive thing in any budget for an institution of higher education. So what is the total dollar increase?
For all salaries in the operating budget, including benefits, because we also had some higher benefits. We had a higher increase in our benefits rates this year that also hit.
Why is that?
We are a self-insured organization. So the premiums that we collect from employees and that we contribute to the self-insurance fund, we manage that fund, and then our provider, Blue Cross Blue Shield, provides to us an actual estimate of what we should charge in rates. And our experience with that is normally very accurate. This particular year, we had an unusually high number. The target was off. We were around 20 to 25% higher on claims than we were on premiums collected, so that resulted in a higher rate increase.
A lot of self-insured risk pools have a cap. Are you one of them, or are you direct?
Absolutely.
If you didn't have that cap and that protection, what would have been the increase?
It was around 29%, I believe.
So you're going to hope for a good year next year on that front. And again, what's the total increase?
About just shy of $1.4 million.
Okay, out of a total budget of?
The grand total operating budget is $32 million in expenditures.
And let's unpack that. How much of that comes from the state? How much from tuition? Give the listeners a chance to see how you're put together there.
We always like to qualify this, that the original model that was envisioned in the 1960s for community colleges was based on one-third tuition fees, one-third state support, one-third local support, and the operating budget that we're presenting this year Tuition fees is at 50.5%. State support is 8.2%. Local support is 34.6%. And then all other is 6.7%.
And other would be corporate support or individual grants, federal grants, that sort of thing?
The largest portion of it, I think, is continuing education courses, the non-credit offerings, as well as some other, like, federal grants and such.
Is that ratio that you just laid out, that pie chart, relatively unchanged, except for the recent four-year period when the state finances were in the toilet?
I think we're seeing an increase in the percentage on tuition and fees. State support, if you set aside the volatility that we've had in the last couple of years, that's probably pretty close. In fact, state support might be a little bit higher in recent years.
Well, this is the second year of a budget that's been delivered. So what hath the General Assembly wrought for you?
We do not know yet, because those appropriations on a bi-college basis have not been released.
How is the state capital bill going to help or affect Heartland Community College?
There's nothing in the most recent capital bill other than a restoration of a Challenger Learning Center project, remodeling project that was put on hold when the state budget crisis hit, and that's about $86,000.
Well, that's small enough that it might appear rather quickly, but a lot of those projects are deferred until the revenue starts coming in.
We are not going to revive activities on that until we have more tangible evidence of the funds flowing.
What can property taxpayers expect?
We won't set the levy until later in the year, but this budget is predicated on not increasing taxes.
Doug Minter is the Vice President for Finance at Heartland Community College. Thank you, and thanks to Keith Corneal, the President of Heartland Community College. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Heartland says nearly 88,000 people in McLean, Livingston, and Logan counties have less than an associate's degree. That's 58% of the population. And nearly 12,000 people in the three-county area have no high school diploma. That's close to 8% of the population.